Hello, America, and to the rest of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to a pre-Third Intifada installment of Let's Weekend.
You couldn't even get through that without cracking up.
No, I could not. It's not really going to be in the show, but as some of you probably already know, Donald Trump has gone ahead saying that the United States is going to recognize Jerusalem as the official capital of Israel, and the rest of the world shit their britches.
This people is how all hell breaks loose. What he said. People have died as a result.
And it's also become pretty clear that he didn't really understand the full implications of what such an action would entail.
Clearly you know, not.
Somebody who's in his ear put him up to this.
Joy.
Yeah, but as far as we know, that's basically the news on that subject. Yes, there's been protests, and Philip probably already died. But again, there hasn't been another intifada declared. But rest assured, if one does, then shit's going to go down, and it's going to be partying like it's 2004 all over again. So prepare yourselves. All right, so, of course, this week we're going to be talking about, well, this and that. We now know who Time's Person of the Year is going to be. Sam Sater had some drama over an MSNBC that really never should have happened. Rupert Murdoch lost one of his homes
in a really ironic way.
Oh yeah, love that one. We've also got some science and archaeological news. Apparently there was some old caves that were discovered under Montreal that are actually 15,000 years old. And we'll talk about all that and more on Let's Weekend. Now, just fair warning to all the folks who are listening, if it seems like we may be rushing at any points or if we immediately need to stop, PSX is going to be happening in exactly, but just under about, 2 hours, about an hour and 53 minutes. So we kind of have to shut it. We kind of have to wind it down as that moment approaches. So with all of that that's been up, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I've been doing some listening to some audiobooks. Right now I'm going through A Night Without Stars by Peter F. Hamilton, which is the second of the Chronicles of the Fallers. Not too bad. Mm-hmm. This one takes place 250 years after the first book, so I guess it's a sequel, sort of. But I guess it could kind of stand on its own. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not his best work. I think he's kind of been slipping lately, if I'm brutally honest. So that's a thing. Also started and finished a rather good self-help book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. By Mark Manson. It's actually a very, very good, very enlightening, and very entertaining read. He makes a lot of sense in that, well, the title in itself is a little bit misleading because if you don't give a fuck about anything, you're a psychopath, and he addresses that. His main premise is that people give too much fucks. So it's about prioritizing your fucks and saving your fucks for stuff that is truly fuckworthy. That's one of his main premises of his book. And there's a lot of other, you know, lots of gems of wisdom in there that I recommend people check out. It's helped me immensely. So yeah, check that out. It's good stuff. Also, what did I also do? Yeah, The Grand Tour, Season 2, Episode 1 came out this week. And I watched it, and it's a lot better. It's basically it's become Top Gear again. So
cool.
That's a good thing. They got rid of that celebrity brain crash thing, which was, while it was kind of hilarious, it was really stupid.
You don't want to let any joke go on too long.
No. They ran it maybe the whole season, which was probably, I don't know, 7 episodes too many. But yeah, they've found a track, and now instead of stars in reasonably priced cars, they have They basically pit two people from the same profession against each other in a Jaguar F-Type. So that's kind of fun. What else did they do? Oh, yeah, you remember a few months back we were talking about Richard Hammond who had his accident?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's in there. Yeah, they just straight up, like, leave it in.
Yeah, he almost burned himself to death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that happened.
Again.
Yeah. It's good. I'm waiting. I'm gonna enjoy next week's episode, I'm sure, because they're doing an 11-week run, which is, I think, three more than they ran last season. So, yeah, they've got the budget. Part of that, I think, stems from the fact that they're not traveling as much. They're not filming in different countries like they did last year. They've set up a home base in England. So that's where they're doing their filming from. And then, of course, there's the films that they do around the world. So, yeah, it's basically Top Gear again. So I'm very thrilled about that. And that's pretty much it for me. How about you, Pat?
I've started getting back into streaming finally. Time constraints and energy constraints had kind of prevented me from doing so for a number of months. But I finally started streaming again, kind of some Game of the Year stuff that I'm working on. Did some Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite on a 3-hour stream a few nights ago. It feels good to just be getting back into things and just do it. Getting back to streaming, hanging out. It's a good feeling. Also, I have finalized my initial Game of the Year list. I'm not sure if I'm going to run with it, but at the very least, I am comfortable with it as it is right now. I'm just really surprised with what I put in the number one spot. I knew it was going to be on the list. I just didn't realize how high. So that will maybe be something to watch in the coming weeks.
Yep.
That's been it for me.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
We got our Nintendo Switch on Monday, so you can damn well guess what I've been doing.
Mario Odyssey and everything else.
There are other things, but why fucking bother? There's Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, been enjoying that. And watching Little Britain. It's watching weird shit here and there. I mean, I can't think of anything that I've watched other than that, so I don't know. It's been a weird week. I wasn't supposed to be here this week, but I am, and I'm glad. But I gotta go to Kentucky another week, so.
Oh, joy.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna happen. So, yeah, but really not been doing a lot other than enjoying the fuck out of that new system.
Mm.
So
I'm gonna get one for Christmas. So I will be there with you.
We didn't wait until Christmas, so
yeah,
let's.
I know you didn't wait.
Let's just hope that doesn't.
I'm sensing some resentment.
Yeah. Oh, just got to get the rest of them on the same page as you. You know.
I got to get your friend code now.
Oh yeah, yeah, I got to do that.
Yeah. So, I don't know if any of you listening can hear it, but I'm trying to set Teresa on fire with my mind.
I can't be set on fire, man. I'm already burning.
Especially not in this freaking weather.
Jeez, right? It's freaking cold, man. Is it snowing in other places?
It is snowing everywhere down here except Macon.
So you feel left out?
Yeah, I do.
Hell, Texas and Hawaii got snow recently.
Yeah, yeah, the people in Texas are losing their damn mind. Kind of funny. Virginia, they've got snow. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, quick reminder to the people in Texas, you cannot redirect the weather with bullets. So,
yeah.
If you take your time, you'll be fine driving through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go slow, people. Go slow. Well, not that slow. Yeah.
But
yeah, that's pretty much it for me. What about you, Chris? What have you been doing?
So I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and it was pretty good. I did not know what to expect from the story other than the main thing that they revealed during the, I think it was the first trailer, that Peter meets his father. Other than that, that and the Mary Poppins thing.
Hmm.
That's the only thing I knew, because when they announced the new Mary Poppins movie, people kept saying, oh, what about Yondu? All this stuff. And I was like, okay, I guess there's something with that, which it's pretty good. I don't know why it's such a big deal, but hey. Yeah, and it's crazy how this like weird kind of offshoot of the Marvel Cinematic Universe deals with like the biggest plot in the entire thing. As there's a big threat to every planet in the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas everybody else is like, oh, there's these aliens on our planets or these interdimensional beings attacking, all that stuff. Mm. It's like, oh, this guy might be able to kill everybody in the entire universe.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty neat. And sort of feeds into what's coming up next with the new Avengers stuff that I'm looking forward to. But as for games, I've been playing more Nier Automata. I don't know where I'm at exactly as far as getting close to the end, but I'm making some good progress. But yeah, it's still pretty good, still unlocking some new weapons potentially, though I don't know how I'm going to really upgrade them to be usable.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you have to collect specific like crafting materials to upgrade them. And I'm kind of trying to mainline it, not worry too much about that stuff or the side stuff that isn't just on the way to do what I'm doing. But yeah, so far so good on that. And I'm playing more Super Lucky's Tale. I'm in the final world, the final set of levels.
Mm-hmm.
It's clumsily mediocre, very much. It's okay. It's good enough that I'm going to finish it, but it frustrates the hell out of me at times just how clumsy it is, especially when they try to do 2.5D levels. And it controls like the 3D gameplay, where it's really hard to know when you're able to grab onto ledges to pull yourself up on jumps. In 2D, that's even worse. And there's just a lot of it that is not, it doesn't control as well as it should. And there's tons of platformers out there that control well, not to have to really deal with one that doesn't. Yeah, I don't have much more to go in it. I think I got like four more achievements in it, so I'm going to finish all that up. And it kind of points out one of the things I don't like about achievements on Xbox One and the PS4. There are secret trophies that you can just reveal what it's supposed to be. Sometimes to your detriment, sometimes to your benefit. Because if you don't know which one's the spoiler trophy or which one's just, hey, we just don't want to tell you what this is. On Xbox One, they do not let you do that. So there's a couple that are just, hey, get all the clovers in each of the worlds and beat the boss of that world. Then it has one for burrowing 10,000 meters, which is just one of the abilities you have, which would be good to have that track, but it's secret, so it doesn't do that. Though it is one of the stats it tracks in that other tab. So there's a way to do it. It's just I have to go back out to the game's page from the game just to figure out how much more I have to do of that, which is kind of annoying. And you know what? It'd be nice if you could just say, hey, screw your secret crap. Just tell me what this is for.
Yeah.
Instead of me having to go out to like true achievements and do that there.
Yeah, for stuff like that, I tend to use the Xbox app because it tends to track those stats a little bit better than the dashboard does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, having that on your phone or whatever, you can just look over. It's like, oh, okay, I'm not that far away.
Yeah. I think I'm roughly halfway to it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit more to that 10,000 meters. The weird thing is, I still have like tons of these coins that mean nothing. I have like 11,000 of them. It's just comical now. It's sort of like if it's kind of like how you just collect coins ad nauseum in Mario Odyssey, but you have a purpose for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, what if you just collect coins and they don't mean anything? They even respawn in the sort of little hub worlds, and it doesn't mean anything. It's like, why are these there?
You're probably going to finish the game and then get a shop where you buy loot boxes.
Or it's like, hey, you can play more. It's like, I'm good. I'm good. Mm-hmm. I want the space and hard drive back. There is the Cards Against Humanity Saves America stuff. I got that recently. They're on what they call day 3. The first day is the Trump wall thing, which was pretty good. There's some nice cards that came with it. The second day was they announced a new podcast called the Good News Podcast, I think it is, where it's just a podcast that releases every weekday, and it just gives you all the good news.
Must be a short podcast.
Yeah, it's like 5 minutes. It's a pretty good podcast. Not just like current news, but it's like, hey, where's the thing? I have it here. Oh yeah, it's like, hey, between 1990 and 2010, the number of people living in extreme poverty fell by half, from 43% to 21%, a reduction of almost 1 billion people. It's like, hey, that's good news.
Yeah.
It's not the shithole we're going to be talking about later on.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then they got day 3, which was about wealth inequality. And essentially, they took some of the money that they got from the like 150,000 people that signed up for this thing. They also did a survey with it and figured out the 100 poorest people. And sent them a check for $1,000. The next 10,000 poorest recipients got a $15 check. And then everybody else, it says here, you got nothing if you don't like it, tough titties. They have a nice site called Cards Against Humanity Redistributes Your Wealth.com. That's a mouthful, but it has like people that got this money actually can put right up stories about what they're doing with it. People like, oh, I'm paying off my student loan debt. Or I'm paying off some bills and then buying some Christmas presents for my family that I wasn't sure I was going to get. All that sort of stuff. As I said earlier, it's good news.
Yeah.
Not just shithole after shithole. But yeah, I also added 2 new cards with that. It's a black card that says, oh shit, I just got blank. And the white card is my money stolen by Cards Against Humanity, redistributed to people poorer than me.
Nice.
Which would be a nightmare card for people on the GOP side.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been pretty fun to get. And that's been it.
All right. I guess it's my turn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, on the game front, I'm still, doing Stardew Valley. And still getting along on that. I also recently this week, I downloaded a new game for my PC called Tooth and Tail. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
Yeah, it's from the dude that did Monaco.
Mm-hmm. It's a real-time strategy game where basically you play little rodent critters who are sort of in a war over food. And it's loaded with so much dark humor. it's basically based around the idea that it's this civilization of rodents, and at some point their food supply becomes compromised, and then one of the main guys that you play, they create this system, they create this system called the lottery whenever the food comes low, which basically means that whoever gets picked in the lottery ends up going on the dinner table, and this guy's son ends up being picked for the lottery, and so he decides to start a revolution. And there's like a couple different factions involved. There's the long coats, which are basically like bourgeois liberal type revolutionaries made up of like mercenaries and shit. There's the common folk who are, well, take a wild guess what they are. There's the what's called the KZR, the KSR, which is basically state sec, you know, like a secret police force. Mm-hmm. And then there's the civilized who are basically religious fanatics. They even have suicide bomber mice. And
apparently that isn't efficient.
And their sort of resource going works is that basically you have to build what's called a grist mill, and then you surround it with farms, and those farms are worked on by swine, as in, you know, semi-intelligent pig people.
Hmm.
And they farm the grain, and then the grist mill goes up and meat comes out.
Yeah.
Guess where the meat comes from?
The help.
Yeah.
Are we eating the rich here?
Not at the moment.
No.
Considering the way this game is going, I'm taking a guess that's eventually where it's going to end up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've been playing that. As far as like books and reading goes, I've been reading Revelation Space by Alistair Reynolds. He is a writer I've been wanting to get into for a long time, but for whatever reason, he always gets off of my radar because something else comes along. And this December, I've decided I'm going to make a serious effort to read his work. And it's pretty good, I'm not going to lie. Basically, it sort of revolves around the idea of trying to, it's basically like a very, it's like a space opera, but it's like very hard sci-fi, so it's about as hard sci-fi you can get and still be a space opera at the same time. So that means like no faster than light travel. But it does, however, mean alien civilizations, and basically what the book tries to do is it tries to create a sort of unique answer to the Fermi paradox. Now, do any of you guys know what the Fermi paradox is?
Where is everybody?
Yeah, that's the Fermi paradox. Basically, you know, there's what's called the Drake equation and the Fermi paradox. The Drake equation is the equation that gives up the probability and probable number of the number of extraterrestrial civilizations in the universe. The Fermi paradox is then the follow-up question. Well, then where are they and why? Where did they go? And in Revelation Space, they find out that, yes, there are alien civilizations out there. There's just one problem. They're all dead. And a big part of sort of not just Revelation Space, but the whole book series is finding out why is that? So on top of being a sort of hard sci-fi space opera, there's also a bit of cosmic horror in there too. It's good shit.
I recommend it.
Yeah. I would, however, recommend that if you're going to read it, get either like one of the big print paperback editions or like audiobook, because I'm reading the mass market paperback right now, and the letter is kind of tiny. So yeah, other than that, anime, been watching anime. I started watching two particular series. One is called Heavy Object, and it is a sort of near future sci-fi anime, created by the same guy who created, a certain magical index, basically about the future world in which, people decide to, focus most of warfare around gigantic war machines. And no, that doesn't mean giant robots. It means gigantic tanks.
Okay.
In fact, there's even a joke in one of like the first few episodes where they basically say that the whole concept of a giant robot would be stupid because its center of gravity would be too off, and it would basically collapse under its own weight.
No. Let's not put reality into this shit.
So that's one. But the other one I recently started and really liking is one that's sort of become a cult classic in recently. It's called Mob Psycho 100.
I hear that's good.
It is really good. It is also hilarious. It's created by the same guy that created One Punch Man. Okay. So the art style and the sort of sense of humor is still the same. It's basically about this kid who's in middle school who has like really extremely powerful psychic powers, but he doesn't really know how to do them, so how to use them yet. But he's working under the tutelage of another professional psychic, except this professional psychic is a complete and total fraud, and he's basically exploiting our hero for his labor so that he can make his money. And you know, it deals with sort of the trials and tribulations of being a super powerful psychic while also going to middle school, and it goes in directions you don't quite expect, because it seems to be content in the idea of sort of defying all of the tropes and cliches of like this type of story. So like in the second episode, he is trying to find a club he wants to join, and the one club that that is like almost on the verge of collapsing is the Telepathy Club. And so their fifth member decided to leave, which if those of you don't know, in most Japanese middle schools and high schools, their club policy is it has to be at least five people.
Yep.
You know, that's why, you know, like in Doki Doki Literature Club, there's five people in the club.
Yep. Did you finally play that?
Yes, I did.
Good.
And, you know, so you're thinking like at the end, like he's going to end up being the new fifth member of the Telepathy Club, because, you know, that's sort of how these types of stories work. But he doesn't do that. Instead, what he ends up doing is he ends up joining the Bodybuilder Club, which is taking over the space of this particular club because he actually wants to better himself.
Hmm. Okay. Not where you thought that was going to go.
Yeah. Just watch it yourself. It goes in just weird, hilarious places.
Oh, it's on my Crunchyroll list right now.
It's also on Funimation for anybody who's does Funimation now. It's also on there too. Also doing holiday shit.
Cool.
As we all are.
Oh man, we got to put up our tree. Shit.
I've already done that. But at some point, probably in the next couple of days, I'm going to have to go over to my grandmother's house and help her put up her tree. And then some of the decorations, too. And I better do good, because she's the one who's probably going to be buying me my Switch for Christmas. So,
dude, you better bring her, like, a really nice fucking wreath or something, man.
That's about all of it. Anything we want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, then, I believe it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, down here in Georgia, there's a lot of, odd things that you can occasionally come across. Some of them quite nice. For example, here in Macon, we have what's called the Hay House, which is this old school, like, antebellum mansion that has, like, that's probably one of the most well-engineered houses you'll ever come across. It had, like, a dumbwaiter system and central air. And, like, all this stuff, like, hundreds of years before that became a thing.
Yeah.
We've also got, you know, various Civil War forts. We got the Cannonball House, which is, again, an antebellum mansion that is famous for managing not to be blown to smithereens, because during the Battle of, I think it was Antietam, a cannonball flew through the front door and lodged itself into the stairwell, where it still sits and has not and has yet to blow up.
That makes me a little nervous.
No, actually, you shouldn't, because those old school cannonballs had wooden fuses, and that fuse has long since rotted away. So it basically, the only way you could actually set it off now would be to Well, I'm not going to tell you, but anyway, the thing's got armed guards around it anyway, so.
Okay.
But there's also these other another thing that you can find down here in Georgia. It's in Elbert County. It's about 90 miles east of Atlanta. And it's famous or infamous because of all the conspiracy people that are obsessed with it. They're called the Georgia Guidestones.
Oh, God, yep.
Yeah, I have a feeling some of you may have heard of this.
I am familiar.
Okay, so here's what you need to know. Like I said, Elbert County, Georgia, 90 miles east of Atlanta. It's 45 miles from Athens, about 9 miles north of the center of the city of Elberton. It's a giant granite monument. It's literally out in the middle of freaking nowhere. Like, it's a field and then this thing. Like, it's literally, like I said, the closest city is, like, the closest town is, like, almost 10 miles away. And so here's what people know. As far as anybody knows, back in June 1979, a guy calling himself Robert C. Christian approached the Elberton Granite Finishing Company, who he claimed to be operating on, quote, behalf of a small group of loyal Americans, and commissioned this particular structure. Now, this structure, oh, by the way, as far as who the identity of Robert C. Christian is, the only two people that know is the guy who helped bring up the contracts and the granite guy. That's it. Nobody else knows who he is, although there are some pretty good guesses, and I'll get to that in a second. So it's this gigantic three stone slabs topped off with a giant granite capstone on the top that connects the three of them. Well, actually, I said three. It's actually five slabs. On these stone slabs, in eight different languages, with one language on each face of the four large upright stones, the fifth one's on top, and moving clockwise from the north, these languages are English, Spanish, Swahili, Hindi, Hebrew, Arabic, Chinese, and Russian. So it was the most spoken languages at the time it was made. And on these guidestones, in these languages, there are 10 quote-unquote guidelines or principles that are engraved on them. These are what they say. These are the 10 guidestones. 1. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. 2. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. 3. Unite humanity with a living new language. 4. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. 5. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Let all nations rule internally. This is number 6. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. 7. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. 8. Balance personal rights with social duties. 9. Truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. And number 10. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. Yes, it's actually twice. And then a few feet of the west of that monument, there's a granite ledger that basically offers like facts and figures, like, you know, the guy who commissioned it, when it was erected, it given its astronomical features, the sponsors, the time capsule that was put in, and of course the author, which is Robert C. Christian. And then of course there's physical data. So, yeah, that's literally, like, just a thing that's out in the middle of butt-fuck nowhere in Georgia, you know? And as you can probably guess, being a big monument with a sort of social meshes behind it, you can guess that the conspiracy-minded people are just drawn to this thing. You know, they think it's like a blueprint for a new world order. Everyone from... You know, like, it's supposed to be a... In fact, it's actually been vandalized once or twice, as you can clearly see here. It's been spray-painted. People have tried to take a sledgehammer to this thing. Famous conspiracy nutball Mark Dice has basically called it you know, Mark Dice, Alex Jones, basically all the crazy conspiracy people you can think of, have basically used this as supposed to be some sort of New World Order concept, which, if this was by someone who was trying to take over the world, why would they leave it out in plain view for everyone to see?
Right? You know, like 40 feet tall?
Yeah. I mean, I admit it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, it's a thing. People can go and see it.
It's probably a Pokestop by now.
Probably. Now, here's the part that everybody is curious about, which is, who is the guy that put up the Georgia Guidestones? Now, the guy who supposedly wrote up the contracts for this has only said two things about Robert C. Christian. That one, he was a man of middle age. Two, he was from the South or had a Southern accent. And three, he had a mustache. Now, who is a certain Southerner that may be of middle age, has a mustache, and is really into New Agey hippy dippy shit?
Well, there's probably like three of them. Now that you put in the New Age hippy dippy shit, you know, thing.
Most people have guessed that it was probably Ted Turner. And as for its purpose of why it was actually put up, do you guys know who Brad Meltzer is? Okay, yeah, so he's like an author, and he's occasionally had like had some TV shows on the History Channel, and he basically put forth the idea that the reason this was put up was because this was originally built in 1979, which was at the height of the Cold War, and it's believed that the reason this was put up there is because it was meant to be sort of a guide for humanity after like a post-nuclear World War III. And the reason that it says that to keep humanity at 500 million is because it's assumed that most of humanity had been wiped out in the war. And the reason people think this might be Ted Turner is because, keep in mind, Ted Turner is the guy who had the who had a famous end of the world broadcast sort of hidden away in the archives that was supposed to be broadcast on all Turner network broadcasting networks if the world was to end.
Yeah.
You guys have probably seen it, right? It's that band playing Near My God to Thee.
Yeah, I think that got it. It got out. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Georgia Guidestones. It is a thing. And that has been Brandon's Random Factoid.
Cool. Hey.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on, it's now time for the show proper, and first off, as always, we have to start with our asshole of the week, and we actually have two.
Again.
So our first asshole of the week is the Senate GOP, because they managed to ram their tax reform bill through the Senate late Friday, you know, the one that they hadn't finished writing, and they only had allowed the senators an hour to read before the vote was to happen.
Yeah. It had a lot of terrible shit hidden in it, too.
Yeah, that thing, by the way, the bill itself was like 400-plus pages. And a lot of it like had like additional language that was scratched into the margins in damn near illegible handwriting.
Yeah.
And it's basically the Congressional Budget Office has basically said that this is probably going to add something like I'm trying to remember how much was it? Like 7.3 trillion.
1.4 trillion.
$1.4 trillion to the national deficit, something like that.
Where the GOP said it's gonna pay for itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mike and then, says fuck you, even though he doesn't know he's saying it.
Also, they then immediately started talking about the need to start cutting some of the social programs.
My whole family says fuck you to them, even though they don't know they're saying it.
And there's other things in it that don't even have to do with taxes, like
defining life as beginning in conception, for example.
Yeah. Probably mm-hmm. setting up for being able to charge women with murder.
Mm-hmm.
Or having abortions. What else is there? There's definitely something about... Oh, crap, I'm blanking on it. Fortunately, some of this stuff is not well-publicized.
Yeah.
Because obviously most of the media has not been able to see much of any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a lot more stuff in there that... Like the mandate for Obamacare is going to go away if they manage to get this passed all the way through.
Yeah.
That's about 13 million people who will lose their insurance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple other things as well.
Anyway, the point is, whenever you hear up-and-coming GOP or Republican who's maybe wanting to get elected and he starts talking and complaining about the deficit, or specifically a congressman who is wanting to get reelected coming 2018, hint, hint, don't believe them. They're full of shit. Because they just added $1 trillion+ to the deficit. Almost overnight.
Yep. Brianna Wu, 2018.
Mm-hmm. Vote for me and I won't blow your fucking nuts off.
Well, that would be a campaign message I could get behind.
Well, this is Georgia, so it would definitely work.
Well, she's in the Massachusetts district, so
yeah,
it's going to be interesting. But
as for that thing about, you know, saying life beginning at conception, that is inherently unconstitutional, and if they do try that, it's going to be a court case.
Oh yeah,
and
so.
And
yeah, that bill has built in litigation, basically.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
But they weren't our only asshole of the week. Nope, we've got another one who is just the worst kind of person. So quick refresher. Brock Turner. Brock Turner was that frat boy douchebag who got caught basically sexually assaulting an unconscious woman behind a dumpster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah.
Although apparently, technically, it wasn't a dumpster. It was like a... I don't know. It's not important. But what a lot of people don't know is he basically... He didn't get off scot-free, but he did get convicted, and he got a kind of light sentence. And now, he's actually appealing his conviction, and he wants to be taken off the sex offender registry.
If he wants off it, he needs to invent time machines and go back and stop himself from raping the woman.
Don't fucking rape people. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah,
oh, and by the way, suggestion. Yeah, and by the way, are you wondering by what basis they're using, what grounds they're using for having his conviction overturned?
No, I'm sure it's
Oh, you're going to love this. Okay. So this is from the New York Times. A 172-page brief filed on Friday by Mr. Turner's lawyer said Mr. Turner did not get a fair trial for several reasons, including the exclusion of testimony by character witnesses who spoke of his swimming career and his performance in school and attested to his honesty. About 60 pages focus heavily on how intoxicated the night of the attack.
Being intoxicated doesn't absolve you of anything you do.
Nope.
No, it doesn't. People who, you know, go out and drink and drive and run over their best friend still go to fucking jail.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there's another part. This is my, I don't want to call it personal favorite because this is pretty horrendous, but let's see. It was right in here. I'm trying to remember where it was. They also bring up, says here, Mr. Turner's appeal takes issue with the prosecutor's many references to the dumpster during the trial, particularly her repeated use of the phrase "behind the dumpster." The appeal said the use of the phrase implied an intent on the appellant's part to shield his activities from others and implied moral depravity, callousness, and culpability on the appellant's part because of the inherent connotations of filth, garbage, detritus, and criminal activity frequently generally associated with dumpsters.
Yeah, well, if the shoe goddamn fits.
Also, if you were behind a dumpster, you were behind a dumpster.
Yeah. I think one of the other things they bring up is that technically it wasn't actually a dumpster. It was like a sort of combination of like trash cans and like a recycling center type thing, but it don't matter. It still qualifies as a fucking dumpster. Yeah.
You can take a dump and it's a dumpster.
Yeah.
I tell you what, that just, I fucking hate that guy. Oh my God. I think we all do, but I really fucking hate that guy.
Yeah. As you should, because that is just, that is the kind of, you know, this is what genuine, honest to God, moral depravity looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, you know, the Bible thumpers like to call moral. This is what it really looks like.
Yep.
It's a person who committed a horrendous crime of sexual aggression and feels entitled enough and is completely not oblivious, but just doesn't care enough about any of the legal consequences that he thinks he can come forward, and using this, calling it shoddy reasoning is really underselling it, but
well, he used
that this could actually
money, social position, and social privilege, and all of his connections, including his father, to try to make this go away. Fuck him!
He used his lawyers to try to bully the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's this whole weird thing.
Influenza is a thing, folks.
Yes.
Yeah, there's this whole thing going on with these abusers and harassers that are trying to portray themselves as the victims.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting, because it's like, if you don't want to be treated like the piece of shit you are, don't rape the women. It's a pretty easy thing.
Yeah. By the way,
I don't have a problem not doing that to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, because guess what? We have one woman here. There are four more of us, four men, me, Chris, Pat, and Phil. And guess what? We're having a nice conversation, and not once have I thought of forcing myself on Teresa, nor have the rest of us, because they're regular fucking human beings.
Yep. We have an inherent moral compass, apparently.
We know the difference between right and wrong.
How the fuck does everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
What the hell, man?
But,
what's up with that?
Yeah, but here's the good part, because now we get to the positive, the hero of the week, because speaking of sex offenders getting raked over the coals like they should, John Oliver went and grilled Dustin Hoffman on sexual harassment claims at a panel in public, and the whole thing was recorded.
The amazing thing is it's a panel for Wag the Dog, which I never seen, I never knew about, really.
Mm-hmm.
Until I looked up the summary, and it's about the president going for his reelection shortly before has a sexual scandal come to light with an underage girl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, and then what he tries to do is he tries to manufacture a war in order to distract from it.
And then shit goes sideways, but he still wins.
Yeah, so it was... Dustin Hoffman was there, John Oliver, of course, also Robert De Niro was there, and who else?
Jane Rosenthal, producer.
The producer, Jane Rosenthal.
And director Barry Levinson was also there. But yeah, he was hosting this panel for them on this, I guess it's 20th anniversary of the movie?
Yeah.
Or was it 25?
Yeah, it was either or.
Okay, but... Yeah, so they're talking about things. Obviously, John seizes on the opportunity because Dustin Hoffman's recent allegations kind of came and went as the more serious stuff stuck around, and he basically said, hey, we need to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And they have quotes here. This is something we're going to have to talk about because it's hanging in the air.
Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman said it's hanging in the air. From a few things you've read, you've made incredible assumption about me, he noted, adding sarcastically, you've made the case better than anyone else can. I'm guilty. And the video is, they have it here on the Washington Post article, as well as on their YouTube. It's 6 minutes long. It's pretty great. Because Dustin Hoffman just constantly tries to discredit the woman.
Yeah, and he's really condescending about it, too.
And really bringing up the, oh, why didn't she talk about it in the past 40 years or whatever.
Yeah, and oh boy, that one went over like a lead balloon.
Everybody in the audience groaned.
Oh yeah.
John Oliver said here, after Dustin Hoffman said that it was not reflective of who he really is. John Oliver said, it's not reflective of who I am. It's that kind of response to this stuff that pisses me off. It is reflective of who you were. If you've given no evidence to show it didn't happen, then there was a period of time for a while when you were a creeper around women. Feels like a cop-out to say it wasn't me. Do you understand how that feels like a dismissal?
Yeah.
Hoffman accused Oliver of putting him on a display, said he felt blindsided because neither Oliver nor Tribeca organizers had told him that the moderator would raise the subject, which, hey, how do you think that woman felt?
Exactly.
several times, however, Oliver sought to move on to talk about the films, but Hoffman later returned to the subject of harassment, growing testy, as he said Oliver was not keeping a, quote, open mind about unquestionably believing accusers. Do you believe the stuff you read? Hoffman asked. Yes, Oliver replied. Because there's no point in accuser lying. Well, there's a point in her not bringing it up for 40 years, Hoffman said. Oh, Dustin, Oliver said disapprovingly, putting his head in his hand. At one point, Rosenthal tried to jump in and defuse the situation. You also had the way men and women worked together in the past. You were in a situation where that was then, this was now, Rosenthal said. And what difference is all this going to make? This conversation doesn't do any good. We have a platform here. How are we moving the issue forward? Oliver, though, said it felt it was imperative to talk about it. This isn't fun for me. There's an elephant in the room because this particular incident conversation has not been had. You know, the film they were getting to discuss dealt with sexual misconduct by a powerful man. Rosenthal said of the film, it wasn't produced by Weinstein or Miramax. Kevin Spacey wasn't starring in it. Let's look at real sexual criminal predators. Oliver retorted, that's a low bar. And so, yeah. Then he also tried to say, Hoffman also cited Tootsie as evidence of his feminist bona fides. I would not have made that movie if I didn't have an incredible respect for women. Hoffman said the theme of the movie is he became a better man by having been a woman.
Oh, boy. God.
To remind these people of what they've done.
Yeah.
And that they're not going to be able to just outlast it into obscurity. It needs to keep being brought up until they either acknowledge it and try to, accept it or, do the thing where they go away.
Yeah.
Do the thing where they go.
Are you hiring a hitman or something? I mean, Jesus Christ.
No, or they just step down and we hopefully never hear
disappear from into obscurity.
Yeah, like all the, Al Franken and John Conyers.
Yeah.
All that stuff where they stick around, it just makes things worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Mel Gibson, said awful shit, now he's, for whatever reason, back in people's good graces.
Right?
Yeah.
Family movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, that guy should not be in family movies.
Yeah. But, all right, so moving on from there, it's now time for the proper show proper. And we start off with Times Person of the Year. And this year, the Times Person of the Year are what they call the Silence Breakers. People who basically started off this whole chain of events.
The great thing they do here is it ranges from people who you've heard of, like Ashley Judd, Taylor Swift, a bunch of actresses, as well as going down all the way to people who just work normal everyday jobs and even some that are anonymous. It's a big article. People should definitely read it. There's lots of great stuff here. Talking about like the Toback stuff, obviously Weinstein, and the great twist after Donald Trump did his whole Times said I might be the person of the year, but I turned them down because it wasn't 100%. It's like, well, he's mentioned a bunch of times here as partially a reason why this has become a big topic. So, hey, he gets to be the person of the year tangentially.
Yes. Not for the reasons he wants.
Yeah. But, yeah, this was a pretty good, I think pretty brilliant decision on Time's part. Because not only does it openly spite Donald Trump in just the best way possible, but I mean, this is true. This is a type of we are currently experiencing in the last couple months a type of sort of cultural revolution that we have not experienced in a long time. It is so widespread that it is resulting in the purge of very influential people from power. Politicians, actors, film producers, corporate people, news media individuals.
Even down to chefs, just people running smaller businesses.
Yeah. Because you can't really call it the Weinstein scandal anymore. It started with Weinstein, but that was just the boiling point when everything finally broke. And, you know, he was, you know, Weinstein really was sort of the start of this. But that just over that, you know, like I said, Harvey Weinstein was one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. He got away with this shit for decades.
He had a network of people dedicated to shielding him.
Yeah, there was like a whole system, like a whole underground system of predators and enablers that had integrated themselves into the Hollywood system and had managed to keep this facade going for decade after decade. And then it all finally broke. And it's really showed that so much of our current society is just rotten to the core.
Yeah.
We had let all this crap go on for just far too long. And it finally just – you can't keep shit like that under wraps forever. Eventually, it's going to come out.
Yep.
You can try and hide it and put a good face on it as much as you want, expend so much energy and so much money on keeping all this shit hidden, but
there's always a day of reckoning.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens posthumously.
Yeah.
Luckily, we're getting this
while these people are still alive.
Still alive and while, still in power.
You know, maybe they can apologize, repent.
Yeah.
Repay their debt?
But no.
Like, good example. Let me give you a good example. George Takei. George Takei got accused of apparently manhandling some dude in the 70s when he was really drunk. And the story came out, and you know what George Takei did? He came out and he said, I don't remember it, but if it did happen, and considering my behavior and the behavior I remember, it's possible that it did. I'm very sorry. That is not the type of person I am anymore. And, you know, I hope that that they're okay. And, you know, I'm very much sorry. And that was it. And nobody really cares because he did exactly what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though it's still a big problem when you see Roy Moore and Donald Trump are just saying, oh, this is all fake news.
Yeah.
And that's as far as anybody can really get.
Yeah.
Because Al Franken is evil to them, but they're perfectly clean because all they have to say is, I didn't do this. And their base at least completely believes it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump's definition of fake news is anything he doesn't like.
Yeah. By the way, that election in Alabama happens Tuesday, and I'm holding
out the vote
that the people of Alabama. And I'm holding out the hope that the people of Alabama will do the right thing.
Mm.
but at the same time,
it's Alabama.
I've been to Alabama before, and you know what? I'm not going to go any further than that. I'm just going to keep sending good vibes and hope for the best, because that's all I can do.
They're in there, the middle of their, what is it, the Anthony Weiner moments that we had from the 2016 election. That's what they're going through right now, of people having to decide whether their morals are more important than their chosen party.
Yeah, and that's the thing you got to remember about, and take it from somebody who lives among them, Southern Republicans. They're Republicans because it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
Like, they may not like the person who is running for it, but they see Democrats as the spawn of Satan.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing, too.
That's
us.
Kind of what you're, what Doug Jones is kind of going up against.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, that all that happens Tuesday. All right, so.
But hey, if Roy Moore wins, we can just say the GOP stands for the grand old pedophiles.
Yeah. And they will never be able to live it down.
No.
And we're
she said, hey, this
shoving that shit in their face.
Girls was not too much for us.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, so moving on. So recently Brexit has sort of become a big topic again after, you know, the talks and the committees and the discussions basically broke down. And so after the latest news, the National, which is like,
it's a big Scottish newspaper.
Yeah. It's specifically a Scottish nationalist newspaper. It supports an independent Scotland. Basically the headline is UK finally releases details of secret Brexit reports, and then a blank page. And they basically asked people on the net, hey, you got something you want to add to this?
And the internet went and did great things to this.
Yeah, so like at the bottom of the paper, it said, what will the impact of Brexit be? Help the UK government out by writing or drawing in the box above, then tweet a picture of it to Scott National or send a community at thenational.scot.
This is all based on... what's his name? David Davis? Basically saying, yeah, we didn't do any analysis on what the impact of Brexit would be on the economy like we said we would.
Yeah.
So basically, they're all going into these discussions not knowing how any of this could go.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is the worst possible thing.
Yeah.
It's like passing a tax bill not knowing the full extent of the impact.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, except, well... Well, except there's a difference there. The one with the tax bill is that was by design.
Yeah.
Here, it was basically by, I don't know, incompetence, I guess. Yeah.
I don't know. There's a thin line between incompetence and whatever the hell the GOP is doing.
Yeah. So we got some great entries here. Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say, we had some great entries here. We've got the shrug emoji. We've got the this is fine dog. We got a Simpsons macro with Homer as Britain and
Marge where Homer draws his line in the bedroom is where they're not going to cross, but he accidentally draws himself in a corner.
Yeah. And of course the famous the famous Jean-Luc Picard face palm.
Some of these I think are particularly UK references.
Yeah, some of these are pretty UK. Yeah. Okay.
There's like
a
couple
here's one
the
that's
TV or something.
Yeah, here's one with the Planet end of Planet of the Apes, except instead of the Statue of Liberty, it's Big Ben sinking into the sand. Picture of Wile E. Coyote just casually walking off a cliff. Christmas list, Brexit impact report, new bike, iPad, Batman, love, Dave Davisy.
And it's great because it's all written like it's done in paint.
Yeah,
yeah, so MS Paint. We got a hangman here. See, it says I'm United. I guess it says it's supposed to be United Kingdom. And then my personal favorite, which is sort of a cartoon of Ireland, Northern and then Scotland running back into the arms of the EU while England is like, no, stop, don't come back.
Yeah, it's a map, but they drew faces on all the countries.
Yeah.
And the UK is like, fine. Hey, where are you going? Everybody else is like, yeah. Hey, EU.
And then finally, it's an error 404.
Whoops, look like this page doesn't exist.
UK not found.
Oh, my God.
God, there is no humor like UK humor. It can be so dry and yet just so vicious at the same time.
I was looking at the comments on the original post. First one is the Titanic sinking. there's some with GIFs, which is great when people figure out how to do that. Somebody put the scene from... What's the Monty Python movie with the knight that gets his limbs cut off? One, but yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, the black knight.
Yeah,
it's but a flesh wound.
What are you gonna do? Bleed on me?
Come over here! I'll bite your ankles off.
Oh, here's a good nerd one. Has the square root of zero on it.
All right, so moving on from there. This is particularly good. So in Philly they had a election, and a resident actually won an elected position with his personal write-in vote.
Yeah, so this is in one of the wards in Philly. Mm-hmm. For the position of
he runs the Ward 21 Division 10.
Yeah, so he just basically runs the polling site.
Yeah.
He gets paid $100 on that one day. That's all it is.
Yeah. But he literally won this election by one vote, and it was his.
Yeah, he says he does this on any of the positions that have nobody competing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's three votes, and he assumes that the other two were ineligible. Might have just been people writing celebrities or whatever.
Yeah.
Because people do this shit, like writing, hey, Pikachu for president.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to start doing this.
Yeah. It's a really interesting strategy because I guess for this particular city, to get on the petition, on the ballot, it requires 10 signatures. But if you're just doing write-in, you don't need any signatures.
Yeah. Yep.
So essentially, you can get in with less than 10 people saying you should do this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're a write-in and nobody else votes, you're kind of in by de facto.
Yeah. Yeah. So it
even shows that one vote can make a big difference.
Mm. Yeah.
Even for the smallest of positions.
Yeah. Just a reminder, folks, that democracy is a participatory activity.
Yeah, it seems like at least the best thing that happened as a result of the Donald Trump win.
Yeah.
Is that people got angry and figured out, oh, we can run.
Yeah.
There's more women, more people of color, more minorities, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Running than there has ever been before, which is great.
Yeah.
He also had a great tweet. My first act as an elected official is to call for the impeachment of Donald Trump. And also now every Tuesday in Metayunk is officially Taco Tuesday.
Now, of course, he can't do either one of those things, but...
No. Who's going to stop him?
Yeah.
Nobody.
All right. Well, moving on. Speaking of more minorities getting into running, who here remembers Kim Davis?
Who can fucking forget her?
She is the bespectacled Jesus freak who decided to deny a marriage license to a gay couple, even though she was legally required to give one. She ended up losing her job, went to court, lost, of course. She's up for election again in 2018, and guess who's going to be challenging her? The guy that was denied the marriage license by her.
David Ermold.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing is there is a picture of him filling out the application right in front of her. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be running against her because she has to obviously approve it.
Yeah. And here's the thing. He's probably going to win, too.
Oh, fuck yes.
Because Kim Davis is really toxic.
Hmm.
She's damaged goods down there. Yeah.
And there's some great lines here. This is not political revenge, told BuzzFeed News. The campaign that I'm running is one of unity and bringing people together. And yeah, there's that's just about the original video that they took of her denying them. She said, I'm not being disrespectful to you. He said, you absolutely have disrespected us. And his partner said, would you do this to an interracial couple? She said, a man and a woman? No.
Yeah, dig yourself a little bit deeper.
Dude, you could totally say it's political revenge. It would not shrink my support for you one iota.
Exactly. If you remember Danica Roem, the transgender woman who won office in Virginia.
Yeah.
There was a cool interview that she did after she won where they started talking about her opponent being very much anti-LGBT, and she's basically responded by saying, well, he is one of my constituents now, and I'm not going to bad talk any of my constituents. I want the best for all of them.
Wow.
It's amazing to see people that can keep their composure in that sort of situation instead of just being a complete jerk and gloating it over the assholes that you beat.
Yeah. And then keep doing it for the following year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so next up, this is the one that really pisses me off. It's the Sam Sater shit over at MSNBC. So Sam Sater, he's kind of an indie journalist. He has a show he does with TYT on YouTube. He also was a contributor to MSNBC. And then he was fired because a certain douchebag and avowed, but he's big enough of a shitlord that he tries to hide it, Mike Cernovich discovered a Polanski tweet that Sater made years ago. I can't remember. Was it like 2009 or 2011, something like that?
2009. This is when essentially Roman Polanski pled guilty to statutory rape after being charged with drugging and raping a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of articles coming out in the media basically defending him.
Roman Polanski,
for whatever reason, defending this act.
Yeah. Yeah, remember that shit that we were talking about with Weinstein? Like we said, that shit integrated itself into the Hollywood system, and that's how they managed to get away with all this shit for so long. Go ahead.
It says, don't care regarding Polanski, but I hope if my daughter is ever raped, it is by an older, truly talented man with a great sense of mise-en-scene.
Yeah, that's the... You notice what he's basically quoting some of the articles that had been written about Polanski that were praising him.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically brings like, well, I hope that if my daughter was raped, it was it was meant to be a backhanded comment.
And sarcasm to anybody that understands the context.
Yeah, he didn't put slash S. Of course, I don't think slash S was a thing at that point either, but... Yeah. But Mike Cernovich is a big enough of an asshole and of course, keep in mind, oh, by the way, I should remember, Mike Cernovich doesn't believe that date rape exists. In fact, he also
said, go ahead and try it. You can't force a woman to have sex if she doesn't want to.
Yeah. He's basically a rape apologist. And
he's also
because
the creator of Pizzagate.
Yeah. And he's such a petty asshole that he tried to get Sam Sater and ruin his career for this, and for a short time he almost succeeded, but then MSNBC apparently realized where this was coming from, and then they turned around and rehired him.
Yeah,
which is good, because
you can't be going in and giving those people can't believe them at face value.
No.
Because he basically said after this all worked for the short time it did, that he was going to start going through the tweet histories of everybody else at MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
Find out anything else that he could find. There's a good video that Sam Sater did over at, there's a show called AM to DM.
Mm-hmm.
Where he talked about this is between getting fired and getting rehired. Where he was talking about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about how you can't trust this guy because he's not doing anything in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't actually care about the Polanski stuff. He doesn't care about, you know, child abuse, all that stuff.
It's just a political witch hunt, yeah.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. And for the record, there's people who are going to start who have been – there's been rumors going around that they're going to try and pull the same shit on Bernie Sanders at some point. Mm.
The funny thing is he's got plenty of skeletons in his closet. That if people wanted to do that, they could have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Moving on from there. This week – President Trump decided to basically steal a bunch of public land.
Yep.
Specifically in Utah, which is where Patrick is living.
Yes.
By the way, I should remind people, this is actually Native American land.
Mm-hmm. Yep, a lot of Native American land, as well as just land of some really valuable resources.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so he basically shrank it by as much as 80%.
Yeah.
Using the Antiquities Act, which is as relevant as it's ever been in its 111-year history.
This is what really Charleston looks
not,
like.
Yeah. There's really not much more to add to this, is there?
Nope.
Now, there's been a few suits that have been filed already to try and stop this.
Mm-hmm.
Alleging that he doesn't have the power to do it through the Antiquities Act because it's intended to allow them to create and add land to these national monuments, not take it away. But there might be some language in there. But the other part of it
basically
is...
basically, he's going to have to go to court to get away with this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the part of it is ways of just... selling off this land for mining and oil stuff and all that, because Trump has been out there saying, yeah, we need to protect the environment, but we still have to leave some for the businesses.
Yeah, okay.
I'm real fucking buying that, huh?
You know what? Teddy Roosevelt needs to crawl out of his grave and punch this asshole in the dick.
Oh yeah, I just remembered one of the things from the tax bill. Opens up the land in the Alaskan refuge.
ANWR. Yep.
For oil drilling.
Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the tax bill.
That's Lisa Murkowski. She's the senator, I think, from Alaska, and she basically said that was basically her sort of condition for voting for the bill, that they would allow drilling in ANWR. So,
yeah, we need more accidents like what happened with the Keystone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which they got that thing back up and running, haven't fixed the land around it. So there's just this huge land that's just got a lot of oil there.
Yep.
That's ruined for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. So now going around to the other side of the category and a bit of schadenfreude here. Rupert Murdoch's house basically got torched in the California wildfires.
A wildfire for which climate change is largely responsible.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. See, my favorite thing on Twitter is him. Okay, so Murdoch is like flying over, I think it was the Arctic, and he takes a picture outside of it, and he's like, look, global warming! Of course, there's all the ice and glaciers and stuff down there. And somebody replied to him, dude, your house is on fire.
Nice.
Schadenfreude is the best Freud.
Yes, it is.
And speaking of those wildfires, somebody took a picture showing what those wildfires actually look like from space. They're actually not quite as... Huh?
These are all from NASA.
Yeah.
Their various satellites in the ISS.
Yeah. It's not quite as apocalyptic as I thought it was going to be. A lot of these wildfires...
It's also if you just realize the scale of what's going on, it's still pretty bad.
Yeah,
it's all these fires are actually spread out from each other. But
still looks crazy just seeing like the smoke above the clouds. Or kind of gives it kind of a weird, I don't know about like 3D, but kind of maybe like the Earth is a tabletop and this is like smoke going above it.
Hmm. That's because the Earth is flat.
So some people say. It's been a bad year for disasters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but this is what happens when you have droughts in California for many, many years.
Yeah, and you have a bunch of rich assholes that won't turn off their hoses. By the way, that's mostly whose house a lot of the rich fuckers' houses are burning right now. And I would call that a cause for celebration, except also it's burning a lot of other low-income neighborhoods. So
yeah, it's basically happening all around L.A.
Yeah.
Which I saw a lot of jokes from L.A. people be like, oh, the traffic was bad enough. Now we're just not going to have anybody because nobody can get into town or out.
Mm. Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, all right. So, all right. Yeah, this is a hockey story, so... Pat.
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago I was on here talking about how Houston got into the NHL expansion discussion and sort of broke down which teams were the favorites to possibly get the 32nd NHL franchise. Seems that whole thing has already played itself out now because Seattle has approved a $660 million renovation to Key Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And the NHL handed them an expansion application on a silver platter.
Okay, so basically so the that's NHL done. Really wanted to be in Seattle.
Oh, they did. Like, I've been watching the situation play out for years. This is something the league has wanted for at least 10 years. Mm. And so once they got the Key Arena renovation approved, looks like I'm not sure who the ownership group's going to be. But maybe a couple are going to step up and see who the league decides on in the end. But, yeah, this was kind of a surprising development. Kind of came out of nowhere. I guess the Houston bid lit a fire under Seattle and got them moving on an arena deal.
Mm-hmm.
So Houston should probably get an NHL team. Maybe the Arizona Coyotes will come up for grabs again. But as it looks now, I think we're going to be seeing a Seattle team start play perhaps as early as 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Well,
it'll be a good hockey town. Right. It already is.
Yep.
Mm. All right. So moving on from there, we've got some news from Montreal. Apparently they found some 15,000-year-old caves that were discovered under a Montreal neighborhood.
Yeah, so this is a place where they knew there were caves.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this sort of, I guess, smallish area that people could go down and explore. But some people figured out that there might be more. Started digging through this limestone wall and eventually managed to get a big enough hole they get through and discover there's way more down there than they thought there could be. And just through the immediate sort of testing, they suspect it's about 15,000 years old.
Hmm.
Wow.
These are all natural, it looks like.
For the most part, I believe. They don't think anybody has been in there for about 15,000 years. And yeah, so they're obviously doing a lot of testing, exploring, and mapping it out just to make sure it's safe before they start letting it open to the public. But yeah, there's this whole part of Montreal. I'm not sure particularly where it's at. And it's the Montreal neighborhood.
St. Leonard.
St. Leonard.
Yeah.
You know where that's at?
Oh, I know where that's at.
Yeah, so yeah, it has about 6 meter high ceilings. Branches off in a number of snaking passages, extending hundreds of meters under that burrow. And so, yeah.
If that's solid, I know many people actually would want to live down there.
Mm-hmm.
In the caves, not St. Leonard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, they say it was formed thousands of years ago during the last ice age when the pressure of massive glaciers split the rock beneath the surface. Hmm. And so, yeah, they built the street over the cave and never found the cave. So, yeah, there's this whole neighborhood that's over these giant caverns.
Yeah. Well, tourist attraction.
Yeah. To be fair, St. Leonard or St. Leonard, as it's called up here, is a fairly affluent part of Montreal. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what develops there.
Yeah, oh, so I guess they've so far gone through about 250 and between 250 and 500 meters of caves so far. I suspect there's a lot more.
Yeah. All right, so moving on, we got a story out of Florida, specifically Weston. Apparently some douchebag was going to go into a Walgreens and was going to hold up the clerk and try and rob him. Problem was, the clerk wouldn't cooperate. In fact, the dude basically pointed a gun at the clerk. He said, "Get your hands up, get the money." And dude just stares him down. Like, literally, he just doesn't move. He stares him down. Says again, "Give me the money." Doesn't do shit. And so the dude
just takes the stuff and runs.
Yep.
The straight up called him out on not having the balls to pull the trigger.
Yep.
Yeah.
He picked the wrong clerk. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently this guy
not a single fuck was given that day.
Nope.
Yeah, so that's a great story he can tell the next guy on the shift. Like, this guy came in waving a gun around and I just fucking stared him off. I wasn't fucking having any of his shit.
Nope.
They think this guy is the same guy that has been apparently robbing other Walgreens. Yeah, so they don't have his identity yet, but obviously putting out feelers for people that might have seen him. But yeah.
And the whole thing was also on tape, too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, security camera.
There's video there.
And it's just...
Obviously, this is not Walmart or Walgreens policy.
Yeah.
It's just do what he says, live to see another day.
Yeah.
Don't fucking try and be a hero.
Yeah. Something tells me this dude was probably near the end of a long shift, and he's like, "I don't give a shit anymore."
Like, really?
Man, I'm leaving. I'm leaving in an hour. Fuck off with your shit. I don't want to be dealing with the cops.
Anyway. Yeah. I know.
All right. So.
Go on.
All right. So keep going. What were you saying?
No, I said I know a guy who could basically stare somebody down like that. It's all in the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. It's very effective.
Yeah. Yeah. So
come back and haunt your ass.
Yeah. Well, moving on, we're going back up to Canada, and what has to go down is just the single most Canadian news story ever. A woman in Ottawa was being charged with driving too slowly on the Canadian highway.
Yeah, so the numbers here, she was in a 100 kilometers per hour zone, driving about... Or she's driving 60 under the speed limit.
Yeah.
She was going at about 40.
Oh, you know what? Fuck that woman.
she's an obstruction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is for a us Americans, nuisance. That's about 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
25 and a 60? Yeah. Fuck that woman.
And I want you to guess how old she was.
I would guess 75.
Any other guesses?
No, I
just tell us.
I'll go north of 80.
47.
Okay.
So, and the great thing, first thing, it's the Ontario Provincial Police, so it's the OPP.
Yeah, you know me.
So they made several attempts to get the driver to pull over onto the right shoulder. I guess she was in the fast lane, so I guess the left lane, with their high beams on.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is just getting better and better.
So yeah, they were trying to get her pulled over.
She at
but
least try. Give me something to explain.
Please.
They don't say anything about that, but eventually had to make a tandem stop with other cruisers. So they had to get other cops to get this woman to stop, even though she's going 25 miles an hour. Yeah, so...
Again, Canada.
She thought it was a 50-kilometer-per-hour zone.
The signs! They're big!
They're hard to miss.
Well, I think the best sign of all would be the other traffic just whizzing by.
You know?
So she's charged with unnecessary slow driving, failing to obey signs, and not having an insurance card.
She didn't have the fucking app on her phone? She's only 47! I'm gonna lose my shit today.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see people this bad, but I usually see a lot of people where I'm getting ready to get off on the next exit, and the person in front of me is like somehow just drafting, like just slowing down, like they're not putting their foot on the gas, like they have no brakes and have to just coast it to the. It's like, what the hell are you doing? You can drive the exit. Right? The exit.
Why waste the gas when somebody else will use it for?
I don't know. It's like the exit lanes are long as hell. They give you plenty of room to brake.
Yeah.
And I'll be sitting here going 50 in a 65 quarter mile from the exit lane.
That's a freaking moving violation. You're right. They're supposed to be doing their goddamn braking in the turn lane or the exit lane. Oh! That's why they have them!
Yeah.
Clearly, I was driving today.
I couldn't tell.
Not at all. All
right. So, next up, this comes from England. A woman is getting engaged to a chandelier.
What?
You know what she calls the chandelier? Lumiere.
Yeah, it's a 90-year-old chandelier, so robbing the cradle. She got it on eBay last year. Spent, I think, £400 on it.
Okay, that's enough internet for tonight.
Fucking bell. Jeez.
Yeah, she identifies as objectum sexual, which means she...
Yes, that is... Okay, yeah, that is actually a thing. Yes.
Yeah.
That's not a joke. That isn't like a... Like a thing, like she's trying to make some statement against same-sex marriage. No, that is actually a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she got engaged on Valentine's Day. With the chandelier, but she is not monogamous. She sleeps with a smaller lamp called... I forget what it was called. I don't know if it's on this one. There's another one where she had a name for it. Jewel?
Yeah.
None of my chandeliers are jealous of each other. They understand that I love them all for their different personalities. For example, I love kissing and cuddling Lumiere, but I sleep with Jewel every night as she is portable and very nice to cuddle.
If you're gonna have objectophilia, why not let it be something like a Hitachi magic wand? I mean, a chandelier?
I sure hope she knows yoga or something.
Yeah, not even.
Her first love was a drum set at 14 years old.
Okay.
She has also previously been in love with the Statue of Liberty, for which she legally changed her name.
That one I could actually understand.
Has traveled to New York 6 times to visit it, but said the distance took its toll on their relationship. Oh, there's another story about Erica Eiffel, a San Francisco woman, is married to the Eiffel Tower.
Does the Eiffel Tower know?
Oh, it is basically a giant metal dick, so...
I mean, they say if you're brave enough.
Yeah. There's a tragic one here. Aja Rita Berliner Mauer, 54 of Sweden, is also known in the OS community for having married the Berlin Wall.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Okay, that one's actually kind of sad.
There's Lee Jin Gui, I'm not great at Korean names, is married to a body pillow, picking his favorite anime character, Amy Wolf.
Have heard of that one.
Amy Wolf of Pennsylvania said she's passionately in love with an Elliesburg amusement park ride, 1001 Nacht. Edward Smith of Washington
State. Roller coaster, isn't it?
Yeah. Edward Smith claims he has had sex with hundreds of cars and is in relationship with Vanilla, a vintage Volkswagen Beetle.
Wow, maybe he has those chrome shifter knobs or something.
Yeah.
That's why I gotta get those car reports.
The message of Let's Weekend is, do you do you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently. What
not literally.
Yeah.
Just make sure you tell the people buying the cars.
Yeah.
And make sure that the car... And make sure that the car gives consent.
There's an episode of Top Gear about that.
Yes. Yep. And make sure that your object of affection can give consent.
Yeah. So you only use...
Ring once if yes, twice if no.
If that alarm goes off in the car, man, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Two in the...
All right. So, all right, so moving on.
Pretty quickly because we're running out of time.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, down to the wire.
13 minutes.
Okay, so next up, sports news. Russia has been banned from the 2018 Winter Olympics. Take a wild guess why.
Well.
Needle in the ass.
Yep.
Or holes in the wall where they passed clean piss through them.
Yeah.
For the test.
Yeah.
Remember Russia sort of has this as like a government program.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a great segment that John Oliver did. This is a few years ago, so shows that it's never deterred from this thing where they had the government involved in all the IOC stuff as far as their doping testing. So of course they're gonna find any way they can to get around it. Now they're just completely banned from the Winter Olympics that are coming up.
Yep.
IOC
just said, screw it, Russia.
Yeah.
Screw you, Russia. We ain't having any more of your shit.
Yeah.
And if they have athletes that are clean, they're allowed to participate, but it's under the sort of generic Olympic banner.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, maybe now there's going to be medals for, you know, everybody else. Just saying.
Yeah. So moving on from there, as everybody knows, the next Olympics are going to be in Tokyo,
summer
2020.
Olympics.
Yeah, the Summer Olympics. Hopefully no one will discover Akira and turn into a giant blob monster when that happens.
Yeah.
But
actually, I'm kind of hoping that that does happen because that would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Anyway.
But they recently released the final mascot designs for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. So yeah, that young children groups, can pick them.
Yeah, three groups. They're going to have school kids pick them.
Mm-hmm.
There's the first set that are... They have, like, themes to this stuff.
Yeah.
The first one has an Olympic character based on a futuristic vision of the world and decorated with a traditional checkered pattern to embody Japan's
Yeah, basically like
innovation.
Robots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's a
the second
Paralympic,
one.
Paralympic characters decorated cherry blossoms, flowers, and has superpowers.
Yeah.
Of course. Second set is based on Japan's Lucky Cat, an Inari
yeah.
fox, which mm-hmm. symbolizes luck. The Paralympic character resembling a guardian dog often seen at Shinto shrines.
Yeah. They're basically Pokemon.
Yeah.
and the third set are sort of more fairy tale ones. The first one is based on the Kitsune fox.
Yeah.
The main one.
I was
going to
say Amaterasu, but yeah, it's a Kitsune.
And the Paralympics mascot is a Tanuki.
Minus the giant balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot.
But it has the big leaf on the head.
Yeah,
yeah it does have
forgot
leaves.
It.
Yeah, I like that final designs.
So it's a female, in other words.
Yeah.
No boat. No Boaty McBoatface.
Nope.
Damn it.
Well,
no,
this
is Japan. This is Japan. They are the king of mascots.
Yeah.
They have thousands of mascots in Japan.
Yeah.
For even like the various districts and schools and businesses
yeah.
and all this, it's ridiculous but awesome at the same time.
Yeah. I know.
There's one district, you know, remember these are go ahead.
You know, I'm saying, you know, I'm not you know, my vote doesn't count, but I would say that
yeah.
third set is probably my favorite.
Yeah. I was gonna say, you were going to say, you may, remember these are kids, you may be forgetting a certain film called Pompoko that was made specifically for children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big balls.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They don't
gigantic
have a problem with big parachute balls like we do.
Yeah.
Here's
they don't try to call them pouches.
Here's one of the best mascots in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
There's a terrifying bear with a cabbage head.
Yeah.
And there's John Oliver showed a video of this thing going to a kid's school, like an elementary school.
Yeah.
And they react the way you expect them from seeing this thing.
Yeah.
Which is
he's part fucking cruel. Cracked one aside.
I just start not. Crying. Like, oh, God, this thing's scary.
Yeah. All right. So.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to kind of go through these a little quickly. Well, these are basically the entertainment ones, so we can kind of go through them kind of fast. So, first and foremost, Ryan Reynolds is now going to be voicing Detective Pikachu in the upcoming movie that is called Detective Pikachu.
Okay.
That is a thing that is happening.
Yes.
This is a weird thing.
This is
Detective Pikachu, I swear I really want to see this movie. Just because it is
I just want to see how it works.
Yeah, because apparently it's supposed to be separate from the actual Pokemon franchise.
Yeah, this is just like there's the Pikachu that Ash has.
Yeah.
And then all the rest.
This is another Pikachu.
This is one that has apparently gone to the UK. It's become a detective and solves crimes. And it's voiced by Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
This just sounds weird enough to work.
Yeah. Moving on, Marvel is creating a serial podcast on Stitcher, and it's going to be featuring Wolverine.
Okay, I'm going to have to subscribe to this just to see what the hell it is.
Also, in more Marvel news, they've got a new initiative for animated shorts and movies called Marvel Rising. I actually do wish we had the time to go through these because they look freaking awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that new Warriors show we talked about a while back with Squirrel Girl and all that, that's where this is sort of starting from.
Yeah. Yep.
They're doing a couple of shorts and then an animated movie, and then I guess going to a show from there.
Yep.
Yeah, they're going to have Inferno, Miss Marvel.
It's got a lot of the female and minority heroes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so you can kind of guess how parts of the comic book fandom reacted.
As poorly as you'd expect.
Some of them thought it was amazing. They was like, because I mean, it's freaking Miss Marvel. Yeah. She's like their most popular character since Spider-Man. And the others called it white genocide. So,
which is hilarious.
Well, white male genocide. Yeah. So,
And I guess this also came with them renaming Spider-Gwen to Ghost Spider.
Yeah. Well, I mean, technically, that she was never called Spider-Gwen in the comics. That was just the comic title.
Yeah.
So. But, okay, so next up from CNBC, Disney has finalized the purchase of Fox Entertainment Holdings. And it's going to be TBA next week, basically. So, it's happening, folks.
Yeah, and...
as if there weren't enough heroes in the new Avengers movie.
No, my immediate thought was, oh shit, now Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite's roster can start to not suck.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it has to be DLC.
Yeah,
but
Game of the Year edition or whatever.
That just means that support will be ongoing, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So Disney says, fuck video games again.
Yeah. And then DC Films is going to be shaking things up after Justice League's, lukewarm box office earnings. Mm. Yeah, who didn't see that one coming?
Yeah, Justice League was... two movies just kind of mashed together. It didn't work so good.
You could definitely tell where Bryan Singer's involvement ends and Joss Whedon's begins, basically. Yep. And it doesn't help that, they did this, they're basically going the Batman v Superman route just after they came off the cuff of the extremely successful, critically and commercially, Wonder Woman movie. Which was actually really good.
Yeah. And the guy that was running their film production stuff is stepping down to just become a regular producer on some of the movies.
They've
got to find somebody else that can run that to run it well.
Yeah.
And maybe find some sort of cohesion in all this.
Yeah.
So now there's the whole thing with Ben Affleck potentially stepping down. And it's like, okay, Wonder Woman's the only thing here that's doing well right now. It's like all the TV stuff is actually doing really well, and CW.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do we get some of that excitement into the movies?
Maybe not have Zack Snyder anywhere near it.
Yeah, but that would probably be my first.
I don't think he's involved in any of the movies
anymore.
At least as like writing or directing.
Hmm. It's at least just production, as far as we know now,
working on things.
Yeah, because he is just. Does it work? Yeah. just does not work. But speaking of movies, Bryan Singer has recently been removed as director of Bohemian Rhapsody after a feud with Malick.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Apparently they were getting in shouting matches, and then there were just large periods of time where Bryan Singer just wasn't on set.
Yeah.
He says
and, so he's
one of his parents was sick, so he was attending them, but Fox wasn't happy
buying
with the long periods of absence. So they fired him for a new guy.
Yeah. And he's basically going to be replaced by Dexter Fletcher, who directed Eddie the Eagle.
Biopic, I heard things about. So, hey, get the guy that's good at biopics on a new biopic.
Yeah. And finally, our last quick story for the night, we finally got the first trailer for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. You know exactly what it's going to be.
It's got dinosaurs and a bunch of people running away from them. So, yeah. That's pretty much all you need to know.
And a volcano. That. Somehow they picked an island that had a potentially active volcano.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Wouldn't
from the very beginning.
Knowing that.
It's like, and why didn't you go for the one that didn't have any of this?
Yeah. And that is going to do it for us tonight, folks.
Yeah.
If you want to write into the show, have a question you want to ask us, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it down in the bottom of the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can see our little cast at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, or archive.org. I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Deloach, I'd like to say goodnight. Sleep tight. Alabama, get out and vote.